The Process, a podcast about creativity and experimental music. In the world of experimental music, outcomes and accolades for creators can be uncertain and at times seem far and few between. Therefore, creators and practitioners of experimental music must embrace the one thing they will always have complete control over, the process. This podcast aims to understand this creative process by listening to new works and discussing them with their creators. Each episode focuses on one creator and their music. Understanding how and why they create can inform aspiring creatives and help audiences better understand and navigate experimental music. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and I'll be your host as we explore the world of experimental music, creativity, and the human need to find purpose in their world and lives. This is The Process. In experimental music, we often put a real high premium on thought or time spent crunching the numbers or wrestling with the beast of creativity and trying to mold this clay or this chisel, this hard stone into this new and interesting idea. And so there's this whole like adversarial narrative. But today's guest, Ryan Suleiman, offers us with the other way of doing things or another way of doing things, which is a more intuitive one. And I've found over the years, I've been drawn to these intuitive type pieces, you know, whether it be a sort of free improv piece sort of an open-ended, maybe graphic notation type piece. But this idea that you're just using your musical training and you're using your musicianship when you're writing. And, you know, you're not just using droll process or a tone row or some type of preconceived form or notion, but you're, you know, in the truest sense, sort of through composing. Well, let's hear what Ryan has to say about all this, and in the same breath, take a listen to his piece for two violins called Fireflies.
I guess I'm kind of like one of those, reluctantly, it's about something, but it's not, but it's also sure. Just a piece of music, right?
Right.
Which I think a lot of composers feel that way about their pieces.
Yeah.
I guess the piece started when my sort of colleague from Boston Conservatory, Sharon Leventhal, asked me to write a piece for two violins.
Great.
So that she and her students could perform in kind of a studio recital that they do at the conservatory.
Great.
Regularly. And so in thinking of what type of piece I would like to write, you know, I'd been up to Vermont the year before, and I got to sort of see the fireflies. I'm from California originally, and so we really don't have fireflies over there so much.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that. So my mom is from Kansas, so I've seen fireflies before.
Yeah.
I got to really experience them there, and it was very interesting. And I think it, you know, the kind of fireflies I'm imagining, they're not like these like, it's not like a whole, there's just like a few, like two or three, just gently pulsating, and it's mostly darkness, but you see a little bit of light once in a while. And like that, that kind of visual image was very beautiful to me. And I felt like writing a piece that was very sort of quiet and gentle, which is something I've been really into a lot in the last maybe 2 or 3 years.
Which is Vermont. I feel like Vermont is such a like less busy place, especially compared to Boston. It's just such a less busy, kind of contemplative, open place. And I can see, I can visualize right now, like looking into the woods and seeing just a few fireflies, not a swarm, like not a swarm of locusts or something like that. It's just a few. So, you mentioned the performers, and, you know, I often ask, you know, who's involved in the piece, and you mentioned the performers and one of your colleagues. How involved were these people in the actual creation of the piece or in the process?
I mean, in this particular case, pretty much not at all.
Okay.
But, you know, I usually what I do is, like, I'm very open to performers that I'm working with seeing what I'm doing. Like, I'm not really secretive about the process, and, like, I'm always happy to kind of get feedback. What usually happens is, like, as I'm working on a piece, I'll send it to a performer, you know, kind of mid-draft and say, hey, like, let me know if you see anything that looks too ridiculous or crazy or, you know, like if you, or if you have, if people have musical thoughts, like I'm very welcome. I welcome that too, you know? And what usually happens, sometimes they'll respond, they'll say a few things, that looks good. And, but most of the time it's kind of like, oftentimes people are just too busy and don't necessarily get to see it, which is okay too. But you know, but in this case, yeah, it was kind of just, handed it off, and then, you know, there was maybe like one tiny little revision that we made after, which is like they have, it involves these hairpin dynamics.
Right.
And I had the hairpins starting from like a, you know, del niente, like a nothing.
Right.
And we, as they were rehearsing, we realized that wasn't what I really wanted. What I really wanted is like for there to actually be like a discrete attack, even if it's a small one.
Very small.
That was the only change that we made. Right. Otherwise, everything was pretty much the same.
Yeah, and you know, it can be really feast or famine too when you're trying to get feedback. And even if it's musicians you really know, sometimes they're hesitant to, you know, give you too much or or, and sometimes not at all. Sometimes they're like, okay, this doesn't work. You can't do that. And you're like, yeah, you can. And they're like, well, we'll see. You know, like there's, you know, and there's that kind of, you know, discussion. So as you're writing this piece, then you're kind of saying you sort of wrote it, you know, in your own headspace. So what tools did you use when you were writing this? Did you have two violins? Did, were you at the piano? What tools were you using to write this?
Yeah. I mean, this was mostly done at the piano. I'm definitely not a string player. Piano, I sort of, I play piano, but I don't, you cannot really call myself a pianist.
Sure.
But yeah, this was done at the piano and just imagining like the sound of these two instruments. I think lately I've been really into just trying to really honor the just the sound of an instrument. And even like, I mean, there are so many amazing techniques that you can write for strings. And I love so much music, so much music that's for strings. Like Sari Alho comes to mind, you know, so we just recently lost, which is so devastating. And she is someone who just has such a, she had such a tremendous and sophisticated understanding of string instruments, right? She can get these beautiful, rich, complex sounds, which I love. But at the same time, I think it's still interesting to just listen to like a warm tone on the violin. Like that is also very valuable. Like Takemitsu is someone who, you know, talks about this, just like just the sound. Like, you know, he compares his pieces to a Japanese garden where, you know, you're kind of, you're not, like, unlike the European gardens, those gardens are just, they're kind of accentuating what's already there, right? And so I've lately, I've really, I like to think of kind of the sounds of instruments in that way. And so starting with two, you know, the opening starts with two violins just kind of playing the same pitch back and forth. And then slowly, very gradually, we get more like two pitches. And there are not really many complex chords. So, which, and I love chords, you know, I, many of my other pieces have like these chords that kind of, you know, maybe are sort of spectral inspired sonorities, but like I also really appreciate like providing a space that is just for us to listen to something very, very simple that's there. Each piece, like when a piece is starting, it kind of has to tell the listener how to take it in, you know?
Sure.
And so having these sort of E unison notes is right. Just telling the listener, hey, this is just like calm down, take a breath.
Right.
This is what's happening and like it's going to keep happening. It's not just the intro, you know?
Right.
Like for a pop song, for example, it's really common like to have this kind of slow intro. And then, okay, like we know that that's not going to...
Then the drop. Right. So there's four bars of piano, and then the drop happens, and you never.
Yeah, don't worry, it's not going to be this the whole time. But no, this one is. It is. Yeah, kind of going to be this the whole time.
Do you consider it the way you're dealing with the two violins? Are you dealing with it like a sort of somebody says something, and then there's a response to that, or how are you treating it? I mean, I know we have the unison at the start, but there is a timing difference, and that timing difference is sort of. Right from the beginning. So there's immediately throughout the piece, there's this hierarchy of like somebody's saying, or some one part is starting and then the next part is coming in later. And that seemed to be kind of like in a very basic description of the piece that kind of seems to be a common thing, like A and then B, A and then B.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and I think in a way, what I realized as I was actually composing is that like, that's the motive. The motive is right. Like one thing, then the other thing, which is so simple and like laughable as a motive, but like that's,
right.
It really was very helpful to sort of generate the piece. And I think that effect of like one note coming in and then the other following it immediately and having them kind of overlap.
Right.
For me, I'm kind of thinking of that as a timbre effect because, you know, it's like the most fearful thing for two string players to have to play
the
unison line, right? Like,
yes.
You know, the score, it's rhythmically, it's, you know, somewhat simple.
Right.
And, you know, conceptually, it's pretty simple, but, you know, immediately, you know, Sharon, you know, commented like, hey, this is not, you know, I mean, they did a fantastic job, but there's a lot here in the score that, you know, one has to work with and one has to think about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even if it's just a, you know, a very simple rhythm, it's the playing the same note in unison, you know, just with two, like it's not the whole orchestra or the whole string section that we can kind of, it all blends in. It's just two violins. Yeah. And I love this idea that it might be her and a student. So then there's this learning thing that would be happening as well too.
Yeah. It was very sweet. Yeah. She was up there with one of her students, Clara Mazzo, and they were sort of doing this thing where they were standing and like they didn't notice it, but they were kind of moving back and forth,
right.
With each measure, you know, and like I kind of commented later, and they're like, "Oh, I didn't know we were doing that." So, that was really cool too.
So around 56, about 56, and, you know, we start to hear now these longer notes now, and it felt inevitable. It had that kind of inertia that, like, String in Four Parts by Cage has, where eventually we just, like, keep, like, slowing down, and it's this sort of inertia in the piece. So, you know, how did you, or what was the process? Were you moving towards sort of longer tones? Or, you know, what was the process for sort of getting us there?
I agree with you that it was always headed that direction.
Right.
Towards this kind of like unison, this resting point. This particular piece, I worked on very intuitively. I tend to be intuitive anyway.
Right.
But this one, like, I was, before, you know, I just met with you, I was looking at my sketches. Yeah. And, like, there's kind of nothing. It's just, I kind of wrote it from left to right. There's a little bit of notes. And, like, you know, I change things and, like, but they're just, I have these dots with some pitches. And
so this wasn't a piece where it was like you wrote the ending first and then it was like, you know, okay, we've got to have some music here and this and that. This was kind of almost through composed or just kind of start to finish. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't always do, but, you know, there's something enjoyable about that and you kind of have to have faith that it's going to work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I felt like, I guess the question was like, how long is this like, like this gesture, how long is that gonna still work before we need to move on to something else?
Right. And then even by bar 74, then we start to get introduced to sort of these faster gestures that come in. And one of the things that's interesting is, you know, so you have these faster gestures within, hidden kind of within the held notes. But we also start to get a little bit more dissonance. Like we start to get a little bit, you know, some different colors. So was that, like you said, sort of an intuitive thing, or did you want to kind of push us to a little bit different territory?
I would say both, you know, like I needed something that was contrasting, but, you know, as I'm sure you noticed, like it kind of is building off of similar, you know, ideas, this sort of back and forth between the instruments. They're kind of centering around a single pitch, you know, and there's a timbre effect as well, but it's a little more volatile, you know, compared with the previous stuff. So there's more undulation, there's more activity. There's a little bit more tension compared with the other stuff. Mm-hmm. Section mark broadly where you had the finger tremolo for both instruments. Obviously there's that rhythmic difference you mentioned, and like the bars leading up to it, that those gestures are actually written out with exact rhythms. But like you said, what you hear is just a slowly morphing, like a gradual movement towards that just finger tremolo, and we're in this new section.
Let's talk about the big black pressure lines that we see in the score. And probably if anybody's listening here on the podcast, when we get to that section, you can hear it almost sounds like a really sort of grating, kind of scratching, like, and it's so first of all, describe to us what's happening. It's a bow pressure thing, but describe you know, how you sort of, you have a note also in the score about how to execute these.
Right. So, I mean, this overpressure, again, that's, for me, that notation and that technique, like Sarajevo is one of the masters of that, that type of technique, and like lots of people use it. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've become very interested in now. The technique, yeah, like you said, it's a bow overpressure where you press too hard on the bow, and you know, the harder you press, the less distinct pitch there is. Sometimes when I ride that, I want like a mixture of noise and pitch.
Right.
Sometimes I want complete noise.
Sure.
And so like I sort of indicating in the score like what it is that I want at a given time. And in this case, it's like it's from pitch, noise, and then the noise just takes over and it's no pitch, and then kind of it's a hard cut and it stops. In this piece, I'm kind of resisting the urge to like mess things up too much or do that. Like, I think I love both. You know, there's room for everything.
Right.
I think musically, right?
Right.
And in this piece, you know, I really tried to just follow my intuition and not overthink stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the opening explores some of the lower register of the violins. Then. Right. We move towards sort of the higher register. And then the end, yeah, I think it was, there's this kind of, before the ending, there's kind of a downward glissando gestures. And then we arrive, you know, back at the lower register. The place that I haven't explored yet is like harmonics, you know, and like harmonics are so beautiful to listen to. And it feels, seemed like a good ending, a good timbre to just sit with for a little while and, you know.
For me, this piece is, when I was listening to it, it was about patience and listening for me. So, you know, and there's kind of this, I don't want to use the M word, minimalism, but I feel like there is a philosophy within that music too, where you're not hanging on to every note. You're trying to kind of be a little less active with listening and be a little bit more of, okay, I need to sit in this and let this happen. And that's what this piece was about for me. What did it mean for you?
I think it's definitely about that for me. I appreciate, you know, the reference to the M word, minimalism. And you also brought the musical N word narrative also, which I also appreciate. And I think
all the hits.
Yeah, narrative and minimalism, like those can be sometimes like four-letter words for some composers, and some people really don't like them. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are times when both of them can be carried out to their a very unsatisfying extreme, like anything. Yeah.
Like some real modernist pieces that are just...
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Completely inaccessible.
So I think this is like kind of maybe... Yeah, it comes back to my comment earlier, like of things that were taught, you know, and like the more we can just, you know, you learn stuff and like, as I think most people who are composers know, or any kind of artist, like you learn all this stuff and you listen to things around you, what people are saying, what you learn in school, what you're hearing, and then you have to just listen to yourself, right? Which is the most important thing, which is sometimes very hard to do, right? Yeah. Like when I really first started composing, like composition, like when I was like in my teens, you know, and like gradually you get, you know, people to play your music. Mm-hmm. I think at first I was very frustrated that things that I wrote in the score wouldn't happen.
Sure.
You know, like all of us experience, right?
Right. It's like the finale syndrome, right? Where you're totally. Like, this is exactly what I wrote. Like, do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, yeah, sometimes... like perform, like nobody's innocent oftentimes, but in this case,
everyone's complicit.
Everyone's complicit, but you know, in these cases, it was kind of my fault. Because sure. I wasn't experienced.
You're developing.
Yeah. Right. You realize like the stuff that you're writing like theoretically makes sense, but like, are people going to actually do it? Right. And are people going to do it? Like, given their experience, given how much time you have for rehearsals, sure. like yeah. those type of things. You know, you kind of have to. So when you're composing, like, I mean, composing is hard just to write a piece that makes musical sense, right? Right. But that's just one little part of it. Absolutely. The rest of it is like, you know, obviously know who you're writing for, what are their strengths, but also right. How much time do they have in their life and their schedule to actually think about your piece?
Right.
You know, what's the venue going to be like? Are there going to be sirens? You know, yeah. is someone going to like, all of those things as a composer, you have to think about. And so for me, like, or I would have performances where like there was some silences and then they're using those silences to turn the page and it's totally ruining the effect right. of what like I wanted. So, and I can't blame them because why, you know, that's a good Got place it. To turn the page, right? But that's totally not, yeah. You realize like, it's not just the sounds. I mean, right. I love sounds, yeah. but like, and ultimately sounds are like the center for what I'm doing, but mm-hmm. music is way, way more than sounds. And if you don't acknowledge that, I think you're kind of having blinders on, like you're making a mistake as an artist, as a composer. So I think the more experience they get, the more I realize, you know, I'm just going to come and say like, hey, you know, don't do this here. Cause I know this is something people are going to do, you know,
right.
or, you know, like really thinking about physically what is going to happen in an actual performance, the more thinking very broadly. And there could be many things that don't have to be, I don't have to make a show about it. Like I don't have to write all this theatrical right. stuff, but it's going to be, but music is always theatrical, whether you want it to be or not.
Right.
You know,
this has been fantastic talking with you today, Ryan. Thanks so much for your time and sharing your piece with us. The piece is called Fireflies. We've been listening to it through the whole episode. Is there anything we can do to learn a little bit more about you and your music? Is there places we can go, places we can listen, and maybe even see some scores?
Sure. Yeah. So. My website, ryansuliman.com. You can check out some of my scores there, some of my music. You can purchase scores, look at samples, listen to music, learn a little bit about my bio and that sort of thing. I have Instagram. I'm on Facebook also. And I have my own podcast, which is I'm relaunching a second season kind of soon, Reflections on Music and Nature. And that's also on my website too.
Thanks to Ryan for sharing his time and music with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please check out other episodes in the series. And as always, like, subscribe, or leave a comment on your preferred podcasting app. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and this has been The Process.